name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. So I thought today I would try to cover two areas. We have two sessions. So I thought I'd cover two areas that are on the practical side of the way we live today. And those two areas I think are quite important. The first one will revolve around our use of social media. And the second is going to be on the perception of sexuality and how we live with those understandings. And you can always, of course, you can understand why both are very intertwined. They're both very connected. So if we look at the topic of social media first, there is no doubt that it plays such a significant part in our lives. It's astounding how obtrusive it is. It is actually a way by which our consciousness is invaded every second by something. Whether you're looking at your phone because you've got a missed call, or a text message, or a BBM, or a WhatsApp, or a Viber, or some other, an email. Remember emails? They're the old school now. Emails used to be a long time ago. There is something constantly there. Or if you're on Twitter and you're getting instant notifications when someone, you know, tweets because they've had a really good breakfast somewhere. Not that anyone here would do that, ever. You know, I don't mind using Twitter. By the way, I think if you want to do something effective, since this talk is about social media, I don't mind you tweeting things out and hashtagging spirituality today, so that maybe people will join in and will get a hint of what we're saying. So there is no doubt that we are not only influenced by social media, but it imposes itself on us. Not on a daily basis or an hourly basis, but it's every waking moment that we have. In the Epistles of the Romans, chapter 14, verse 19, we read, "Therefore, let us pursue the things which make for peace, and the things by which one may edify another." Let us pursue the things which make for peace, and the things by which one may edify another. That should be the approach to everything we do. Everything we pursue needs to be something that brings peace, not creates conflict, and something by which we are edified, both ourselves and others. We are made better. We are made more informed. We are brought closer to God. And that's an important decision maker for us. We always get these questions. Is this the right or wrong? Is it the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do? How do I know God's will? Should I go to this, you know, when you were younger and you're adolescent day, should I go to this party or not? Should I have these friends or not? Should I do this thing or not? Should I go to this outing or not? One of the worst things we can do as spiritual fathers is become surrogate brains for you guys. So you don't need to think anymore. The minute you hit a problem, you call a buna. Being a surrogate brain doesn't work, because you will have to make your own decisions, and you've learned that as you've grown up. So the most important thing for us, and the best thing we can ever teach, is not what to do in a certain situation, but why to do it or not do it. And teach the process of thinking. And this verse, I think, is one that is incredibly useful. Therefore, let us pursue, not just do them when they come our way, but actively, positively, knowingly pursue the things which make for peace, the things by which one may edify another. That needs two things. The first thing is for us to make a judgment. What is edifying? What do I do? What things do I do? How do I live? And how can that be edifying or not edifying? And once I've determined what is edifying, to then pursue it. Because we often have a tendency to sit back and wait for things to hit us in the face. We just sit back and wait. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's fine. And we become lethargic. We become lazy. We become complacent. We become inactive. And that can't be anything that edifies us or edifies others. I know we can stereotype lots of things. And depending on who you speak to, some will say, yeah, social media, it's the greatest thing on the earth. It enabled revolutions, it empowers young people, it removes media blackouts, it allows us to know, and that's great. On the other side of the argument, you'll hear people say, no, it's the worst thing ever because it's invasive, there's a lot of porn that's on the web, people use it in long ways, there are threats, there are hate messages, there is intimidation, there is bullying online. Realistically, media is media. What's the word media? Media is the plural of medium. Right? And those of you who are scientists will know a medium is just a vehicle for transferring something. That's all it is. So the media that we use is just a means of transferring knowledge, understanding, thought, anything. It is neither good nor bad in itself, but its usage is that which is either beneficial or detrimental. And so when we use it, and I think we should, I'm not here to tell you to shy away from using social media. I use social media. You use social media. And it's very positive when it's used properly. But it must be used properly and to edify. The most important thing to remember when using it is the message we get from St. Peter in his first epistle, chapter 1, verse 15. He who called you is holy. You also be holy in all your conduct. Not in your visible conduct. Not in your public conduct. Not in the conduct that is open to others and people can see. Be holy in all your conduct. Particularly when people can't see you. Or you think people can't see you. Because one day it'll be seen, it'll be known, it'll become public. And even if it doesn't, God sees you. The holiness we live is not to impress anyone else, but it is to present ourselves as an image of God in the world. As His image and likeness here, and as His disciples, ambassadors, whatever term we would like to give ourselves. Because it is written, be holy for I am holy. That's why God says to us. God says to us, be holy for I am holy. But Lord, that's such a tall order. You know it's impossible. Why do you want me to be holy? Why do you want me to be like you? And the answer is very simple. I want you to be like me because that is the way you were created. If you're not like me, if you stray away from the model upon which you were created, you don't live properly. You malfunction. You malfunction. You were created to live in a certain way within a certain context. And once you live outside that context, you malfunction. And we don't want to malfunction. We don't want to live in a way not only that is inconsistent to the Christian image we have, but that is sometimes detrimental. Detrimental to us, of course, because judgment in the end of the day is for us, but sometimes detrimental to others. Because those others stumble because of us. We all have a story to tell. And we sometimes want to tell that story, others we don't. We sometimes want to make it very public, and at other times we want to keep it completely private and personal. And the social media we have at the moment allows us to do both. But it's up to us what we do with it. Your life is as public or as private as you want it to be. And sometimes you think, no, well, it's not, because people can be, pull me into the public sphere without me wanting to be there. And yes, to a certain extent, that is true. But when we open ourselves to that sort of threat by dealing, it doesn't work that we suddenly turn around and say, no, I don't want to play anymore. The sooner we make a decision that our private life is private, and that anything that is public must be edifying, but I can't pick and choose, because then I'd be a hypocrite. So everything I live must be edifying. My whole life, my whole message, my whole ethos, everything I do must be in line with the nature. First Corinthians 10:23 reminds us, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are edifying. Of course you can have your own account. Of course you can post things. Of course you can talk about things, portray things. Of course you can tell bits of your story. But don't tell everything that is destructive to you. Don't open your life up too much to scrutiny. Be selective as to who you let into your life. Because there are some people you can trust, and there are others you can't. We almost feel like because we're within an online community, you can trust everyone. I am sometimes astounded, sometimes shocked, at others horrified by what people decide is wise to put up on social media. Whether it's thoughts, opinions, photographs, videos. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. There's one test that I've been using recently, and I tell people to apply this test all the time. If you imagine a huge billboard on your local highway here, a huge advertising billboard, if you are not willing to put last night's photograph up on that billboard, don't put it on your Facebook page. Because that billboard will be seen by 10, 20, 50, 100,000 people. Online, it is seen by millions. But we think sometimes, because we do things from the contained environment of our own computers that it's okay to do it. And the number of times that has come back to haunt people. I'm not saying to you be hypocritical. I'm not saying to you do something but don't reveal it. What I am saying is live a good life. Make the right choices. Don't be in a position that compromises you. But because we do make mistakes, because we do make the wrong choices sometimes, don't do it in a way where even once you are repentant, you can't take it back. Once you've woken up to yourself and realized, this isn't the life I should be living, these aren't the choices I should be making, and you turn around and you genuinely and honestly turn around, repent, confess, start a new life. That bit of you is still out there. And while God has forgiven you completely, because He does, and He always gives us hope, no matter what you do, think of the most horrendous thing you have done in your life. Think of what you might consider as an obstacle to your salvation right now. And that, once it is repented, confessed, is gone. Unconditionally, it is gone. But when we share it in a way that is destructive and makes us vulnerable, even when it is gone in the eyes of God, humanity is far less forgiving. And people are far less forgiving in these settings. So choose what you do. There is an expression that is used in a contemporary way, and I know when I say it to you, you'll understand it. And that is that you own it and don't let it own you. Own it. Make it yours. Adapt it. Rein it in. A wild stallion that you don't just go on the back of and let ride you to oblivion. You break it, you rein it in, and you use it the way that is, in the words of 2 Corinthians, edifying. We sometimes get on this slippery slope, and we think we've lost complete control. We can't do anything anymore. We're never totally out of control. There's always an element of control. And the minute we call upon God and say, Lord, I've had enough. I don't want to live this life anymore. I don't want to make these decisions anymore. I don't want to go down this path anymore. Please help me. Support me. Strengthen me. I am repentant. I've confessed. I've confessed to myself. I've confessed to you. I've confessed to my confession, Father. And I want to turn away from this. Then God can turn us around. And He can turn us away from all of that. I think quite often, social media throws us into an identity crisis. We almost become one person out here, and then we can, at times, create an alter ego. I'm not sure if you guys are old enough to remember when all this email stuff was still very new and very exciting, and you would have teenage girls calling themselves some ridiculous names. Egyptian god princess, love thing, I don't know, just ridiculous things, and you think, you seriously called yourself that publicly? And the funny thing is, they're so desensitized by it that when they go to apply to colleges, they will send Egyptian love goddess at yahoo.com. And they expect to be taken seriously. Yes, thank you. I think you're looking for a different kind of work. But it was happening, and that's how they defined themselves. They created an alter ego. These shy, lovely, timid young women wanted to be these aggressive, sexualized girl power goddesses out there through an email name. And somehow in their own minds they did it. The guys were the same. I won't even go into their names. And then, you know, you apply for a job and you send this, and what image are people going to get of you? Okay, you're not always going to be 15 and silly. You are going to get wisdom and experience and insight. But the way you define yourself will stay with you sometimes if you're not careful. So this sense of identity, because it is done so remotely, allows us to do lots of things. I'll usually get notifications of, you know, on Twitter, these people are now following you. And it brings you up a string of status icons, of people's profile pictures. You think, you seriously use that publicly? Is that how you want people to see you? Is that how you define yourself? Are you really God's image and likeness? Are you really the temple of God and the Holy Spirit abides in you? Is that the picture you're giving to the world? And then you'll get one of these pictures and then some ridiculous random caption that someone's picked up from a rap song somewhere. And then, God is so lovely and I love him and I give my life to him. That's some sort of cyberspace multi-personality disorder. Your profile picture doesn't say you love God. Your caption doesn't say you love God. The messages you send to your friends don't say you love God. But today's verse does. And I have no doubt that today's verse comes from a really deep place. I'm not doubting that. But I'm saying that that inconsistency comes from the way we define ourselves. You know, many, 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 many generations ago, back in the Dark Ages, before internet and email and all of these things, you could change your image by what you did to your hair or how you dressed or where you went. And it was accepted because it really only affected. If you did a silly thing, only your friends around you would realize it. You know, by the time you came to your senses 24 hours later, it was only people who trusted you around you who would laugh at you for the rest of the next month. But you were safe other than that because no one else saw it. Now when people do these things, they are revealed to everyone. And pulling that back becomes so much more difficult. Again, I am not giving you, you know, there's a new series that just came out in England, and it's called How to Get Away with Murder, right? Which puzzles me. I think there are lots of sort of serial killers would like won't be watching that with interest. Yeah, it's a North American show. I didn't say it was ours. Come on, seriously? We have things like Emmerdale and Sherlock and things like that. That's as sinister as people get. Although the bad guy in all these movies always got a British accent. Either because bad is cool or they just think the Brits are more intelligent, but that's a different conversation. I'm not here to say to you, I'm going to let you know how to get over the hypocrisy. That's not what I'm doing. I'm not saying, yeah, just don't expose yourself. I'm not saying be careful. I'm not saying don't expose yourself. Even if you've got something in the closet, keep it in the closet. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I am encouraging you. I am asking you, I'm entreating you to live a holy life. But because holiness is such a process, and we all arrive at different levels of holiness as time goes on, I am imploring you during that journey not to expose yourself. Because even when you have gone over that stage, there are things that you can't turn away from anymore because they will keep coming back. And there are things that God will forgive that people will keep holding over us. Galatians 1:10. For do I now persuade men or God? Do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. What am I trying to do in my life? With all this social media I'm using, does it fit within a wider model? See, I think one of the problems we have is we live our lives in silos. So we have our studies, our work, our families, our social media presence, our life at church, spiritual days like this, and it's all in silos. So, it's easy to manage. I can sort of drop this and raise this at any time. And it becomes almost like an equalizer effect where you cut down some bass, pick up some treble, and, you know, just adjust the sound as you wish. You know, you can sound however you want for that day. You drop this frequency a bit and raise this one. Or next day you want to sound a bit different, so you readjust the frequency again. But that, while I will give it to you, takes a lot of skill, it is also incredibly dangerous. Because while on an equalizer you can do that, but then when you think, oh, I've messed this up so badly. But who does the sound in this church? Okay. Whoever it is, right, you'll keep adjusting and readjusting and adjusting, and then suddenly everything blows out and you think, okay, that was a mistake. You have one of these lovely buttons that God gave humans the sense to create, which is reset. Right? You hit to reset and suddenly it all goes back to the way it was. And you think, wow, why did I ever change any of that? Right? We sometimes don't have that reset button. So we lose track of where we were. We lose track of where we've come from. We don't even know where we want to be. That's why I can't put a long-term plan. I have a short-term plan of what I want to do today, or maybe the next 2 hours. But I don't have a long-term plan in my life. So all of these silos don't work in sync. They're not synchronized. But when I approach my life in a way where I just want to be who I am, I want to be God's image and likeness, I want to please God, not because God is this fearful taskmaster and I have to get brownie points with him, but because I love him for a start. And then, as we learn quite often, when we deal with our parents or our spiritual fathers or good friends, the fact that I love someone and trust that person so much will often mean that I obey, I trust that person's opinion. If this is something that makes you happy, then I'll follow it because I trust you. Even if I don't totally agree, even if I don't totally understand, I still follow you. And that's why we want to please God. not because we're afraid of him, but because we love him and want to make him happy, and at the same time, we say, Lord, I trust you. So if this gives you joy, if this gladdens your heart, it must be good for me. That's the ethos. You see what I said to you from the beginning? I don't want you to learn what's right to do now. I don't want us to be going through life like we're going through multiple choice questions. Is it A, B, C, D? And sometimes we'll make an informed choice, and sometimes we're just going to pick, and it'll be sheer luck. But when we have a process of thought, thinking, who am I? Why am I here? What makes me who I am? And how do I want to live my life within the wider context? Then I have a plan. And I don't just want to please men or women. I want to please God consistently, constantly. All things are permitted to us, but not all things are edifying. 1 Peter 3:4 reads, rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. There is a part of us that is the hidden person. The hidden person of the heart. The hidden person of the heart is the one created by God. The hidden person of the heart is the one with a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. And we all have that hidden person of the heart. We sometimes ignore that person. We sometimes deviate and live a life that is not consistent with that person. But that person is always there. When we say our hearts must be ready for God, that's exactly what we mean. If my heart is ready, it must be prepared to keep him and him alone. And so, whether it's my day-to-day human-facing life or my day-to-day cyber life, whether it's language I use with you here or we use together in this place, or language you use at work or language you use online, it's all the same thing. It comes from that place of the heart, that beautiful and precious place in which God also abides. We've seen a huge change in the world over the past 4 years, 3 years, 2011 with the uprisings in the Middle East, uprisings in Europe, Australasia. People are starting to look at this liberty thing, at this not only social accountability, but social rights. But there's a very stark warning in 1 Corinthians 8:9. But beware, lest somehow this liberty of yours becomes a stumbling block to those who are weak. Your liberty is a right, but it is also a responsibility. It is for you, but it's also a responsibility for others. Of course, you are free to communicate as you wish. One huge challenge at the moment in the workplace, as I'm sure you all know, is that of I suppose, a looser type of communication between men and women. a flirting that goes beyond any levels of propriety. But, you know, it's innocent. Who's being affected? It's fine. It doesn't make a difference. If you've been on the receiving end, or you've actually done it, or you know someone who's been through it, you know that it makes a difference. It has an effect. It feeds a certain part of the ego, and it opens channels to possibly more detrimental relationships. So, yes, you're at liberty, but make sure that your liberty doesn't become a stumbling block. Guys, you probably wouldn't know this, but many moons ago, when a guy wanted to speak to a girl, he would have to call the home phone. And inevitably, when you called the home phone, the dad would pick up.
There's no cell phone.
And you would have to decide whether you say, "Hi, uncle." No, it starts with "Hi, uncle." Or you hang up and pretend that it was just a wrong number. Because thankfully at the time there was also no caller ID. But you know what? That all came with a certain level of security. It came with a sense of security where conversations had to be appropriate, had to be careful, had to be right. Now, we have very young children who are subjected to horrendous grooming activities online because they have unsecured means of communication. That's at one horrible end. But also, in our own relationships, we're no longer accountable. You can send that flirty text. You can make that call. You can spend half the night on the phone, and no one's going to know. Well, no one except you and the other person. And we all know how that develops over time. It's destructive. You're free to do it. It's within your right. But does it cause you to stumble or others to stumble? We need to be accountable for our words. If you can't say it publicly, don't say it. If you can't express it publicly, don't express it. I woke up one morning and I got a beep from my phone, and it was a text message from one of the girls I know. And I opened the text message, and it was a horrific text message that obviously was not meant for me. Graphic. It had a picture, right? And, well, not a picture of her, just a crude picture. And so I just ignored it. I just thought, I'm not going to embarrass her, I ignored it. About 6 hours later, I get a message saying, "Sayyidina, did I send you a message this morning?" From the same girl. So she obviously realized that I'd received it. And she went on to explain that it was just a funny image that she found that she'd sent to her cousin, which I believe. I mean, I don't disbelieve that. But she was so embarrassed because I'd received it. But, I mean, if you can't send it to me, don't send it. As a rule. If you can't share it publicly, don't share it. If you don't want someone to see it, then don't put it up. I don't want to sound like the geeky guy sitting in the basement who is paranoid because he thinks that Area 52 and 53 and 57 still exist. But it's true, everything is monitored. Everything is monitored. When you put up a photograph on social media, you no longer own that photograph. When you have a secure chat with someone, how many of you have received from friends snapshots of conversations that have had with somebody else? Be careful that you don't stumble and you don't make others stumble. I think the most important thing is that we need to live one life. And one very good life. One very positive life. But one life. And I want to close with a passage from Philippians 2:15. Calling us to become blameless and harmless children of God, without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. It doesn't matter how perverse and crooked the generation around us is. We sit there and we blame it. And yes, it is. But it doesn't matter. That's the way the world always has been. And the way it always will be. There will be darkness. It will be crooked. But we are called to be light. Whether it's in our own face-to-face communications and dealings, whether it's over social media, whether it's what we share publicly, or even what we share privately, always have this passage at the forefront of your mind. That you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. And glory be to God forever. Amen.